All right, welcome back, everyone, to The Deep Dive. You know, in the corporate world, things can get, well, complicated. Today, we're diving into a question that's about as old as corporations themselves. When does someone at the top, a company officer, become personally responsible for something like fraud, even if they say, hey, I didn't actually know the financials were cooked? We're looking at a case, Sovereign Pocahontas Covey Bond. And while it happened a while back, it's still super relevant for anyone trying to navigate the often murky waters of corporate finance, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And what makes this case, Sovereign Pocahontas v. Bond, so insightful, especially for our listeners, is how it tackles this idea of responsibility. Can you really just claim ignorance when you're the one presenting financial information, treating it as fact, especially when it turns out to be way off and someone else got hurt relying on what you said? It really gets to the heart of what it means to be in a position of leadership in a corporation.
So picture this. Sovereign Pocahontas Company. They're owed a chunk of change by another company, right? Pretty standard business stuff. Now, the president and the secretary and treasurer of the company that's in debt, they start making some, let's say, optimistic statements about how profitable their company is. And they share these glowing numbers with Sovereign Pocahontas.
And we're not talking about like, oh, they rounded up a bit. It was a massive difference between what they were claiming and what was actually happening in their books. They're telling Sovereign Pocahontas, hey, we made $800 in profit last quarter, over $3,000 last year. Sounds pretty healthy, right?
Except, plot twist, it was totally the opposite. Instead of swimming in profits, they were actually in the red big time. They'd lost $86 the previous quarter, and over the past year, a whopping $2,700 in losses. And get this, these totally bogus numbers, they were right there in black and white in the financial statements they handed over to Sovereign Pocahontas. Imagine seeing those numbers. Wouldn't you feel pretty confident about getting your money back?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the danger here. This completely distorted picture. It directly influenced the choices Sovereign Pocahontas made. They saw those fake profits and thought, okay, we can hold off on collecting the debt. In fact, they even went ahead and made another sale to this company that was, you know, secretly struggling. Talk about being led down the garden path.
It's a perfect illustration of how misleading information can have real-world consequences, real financial pain, for those who take it at face value. And surprise, surprise, the struggling company didn't suddenly turn things around. So, in the end, Sovereign Pocahontas ended up recovering way less money than they would have if they'd acted sooner, you know, before things went from bad to worse.
So, initially, the trial court actually ruled in favor of those officers. Basically, they said, look, there's not enough evidence to prove they knew the numbers were wrong. But Sovereign Pocahontas, they weren't satisfied with that. They felt like justice hadn't been served. So they appealed the decision, and that's where things get really interesting, especially for our law students listening in. The question became, can you really hold these officers responsible for fraud when they put out these false financial statements, even if they claim they were in the dark about the inaccuracies?
And as we dig deeper, you'll see how the answer comes down to this crucial legal concept, reckless disregard. It's not just about, oh, they made a little mistake. It's about whether they acted with such a blatant disregard for the truth that it becomes, legally speaking, a kind of knowledge in itself.
Exactly. So to really grasp how the appellate court reached their decision, we need to break down what they considered the essential elements of fraud. There are five key components, and each one is important.
Okay, so element number one, this one's pretty straightforward. There has to be a false statement about a fact that's, well, important, a material fact, legally speaking. In our case, those wildly inflated profit numbers, yeah, those definitely qualify. They painted a totally fake picture of the company's financial health.
Exactly. Now, element number two, this is where things get really spicy, and it's what the appellate court really zeroed in on. To prove fraud, you need to show either knowledge that the statement was false or, and here's the kicker, a reckless disregard for whether it was true or not. Notice that or there. It's not just about what they actually knew. Sometimes not bothering to find out the truth can be just as bad.
Now, that's a really important distinction for you future lawyers out there. The law gets that sometimes deliberately choosing to be ignorant can be just as damaging as outright lying. The third element we need is intent. The person making that false statement, they have to want the other party to rely on it. In our case, it seems pretty reasonable to assume that those officers, they presented those rosy financials to kind of lull Sovereign Pocahontas into a false sense of security, to make them think, hey, no need to rush on collecting that debt.
What do you think? If you were Sovereign Pocahontas, wouldn't those profit numbers make you feel a little more relaxed about eventually getting paid?
Oh, without a doubt, it creates this illusion of stability. Okay, on to the fourth element. Justifiable reliance. Sovereign Pocahontas, they had to have reasonably believed those false statements and then acted based on that belief. Their decision to delay collecting the debt and to go ahead with another sale, well, that definitely suggests they were taking that information at face value. It's all about whether a reasonable person in their position would have been swayed by those statements. And last but not least, the fifth element, damages. Did someone actually get hurt because of that reliance? Well, we already know Sovereign Pocahontas suffered a financial hit because they made choices based on bogus information. They ended up with less money than they would have if they'd known the truth. So all five pieces of the fraud puzzle were potentially there.
Exactly. And while all five elements are needed to nail down a fraud claim, it was that second one, the knowledge or reckless disregard, that was the real battleground in this appeal. The appellate court had to grapple with whether the fact that those officers claimed they didn't actually know the figures were wrong, was that enough to let them off the hook?
So the first court basically said, no proof they knew they were lying, case closed. But the appellate court took a second look and said, wait a minute.
That's right, and they ended up overturning the trial court's decision. They found there was enough evidence to potentially support a fraud claim, and their reasoning around reckless disregard. That's the key takeaway here.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks. How did the appellate court bridge that gap? How did they go from didn't know to potentially being liable for fraud? What was the thought process there?
Well, the court basically said that because those officers presented such obviously false information about their company's finances, both past and present, and they did it in such a confident, unqualified way, it was logical to conclude they were being reckless. It's like they just threw out those numbers as established facts without even bothering to double check. It comes down to the sheer scale of the error and the apparent lack of any effort to make sure the figures were even remotely close to accurate.
So it wasn't enough to just say, oh, well, somebody else told us that, or we just pulled it from the books. It sounds like the court was expecting a higher standard from these officers, especially when it comes to finances. You can't just plead ignorance when you're at the top.
Exactly. And that brings us to a really insightful point made by Justice Edgerton in his opinion. Saying you believe something when you're actually presenting it as a known fact, well, that's a misrepresentation in itself, especially when you could have easily checked. Just think about that for a moment. When you state something as a definite fact, you're implying you have some basis for knowing it, right?
That's a powerful concept.
Yeah.
So if these officers are saying we made this much profit, as if it's a done deal, but they haven't actually looked at the records, they're not just wrong about the profits, they're being misleading about how certain they are.
Absolutely. Justice Edgerton put it really succinctly. Where knowledge is possible, one who represents a mere belief as knowledge misrepresents a fact. In this case, the officers had access to the company's financial records. By presenting those wrong numbers as solid facts, they weren't just wrong about the profits, they misrepresented what they actually knew and the basis for those figures.
And what about that intent piece, the idea that they wanted Sovereign Pocahontas to buy into those false statements? How did the court address that?
Well, they looked at the context, considering the company was already in hot water financially and that they were making these statements directly to someone they owed money to. It's reasonable to conclude they were trying to persuade Sovereign Pocahontas to be patient, maybe even extend more credit. It's about looking at the situation and thinking, why would they say that?
As we know, that's exactly what happened, and it ended up costing Sovereign Pocahontas a lot of money. So you've got the false information, the reckless disregard for the truth, which the court basically said was a form of knowledge in this context, the likely intention to get Sovereign Pocahontas to rely on it, the fact that they did rely on it, and the financial harm that resulted. It all adds up to a pretty strong case for fraud.
Exactly. So what's the big takeaway here, especially for those of you studying law? This case sends a clear message to anyone in a leadership position in a corporation. You can't just claim ignorance when it comes to your company's financial statements, especially when you're presenting them as facts without making any real effort to verify them. You can't bury your head in the sand and then play innocent when things go south.
This case really set a major precedent. Corporate officers can't just hide behind the excuse, oh, I didn't personally know the numbers were off. Especially if they presented those statements as hard facts without making any reasonable attempt to check if they were true.
It really highlights the responsibility that comes with being a leader. If you're going to talk about your company's finances, you have an obligation to make sure those claims are accurate, or at least that you've done your due diligence.
And this isn't just some ancient legal case that doesn't matter anymore. It has real implications for how we do business today. Think about due diligence in financial deals, the importance of transparency in how companies communicate. This case lays down some fundamental principles. When you're trying to figure out if a company is financially sound, you can't just blindly trust what the people at the top are saying.
Absolutely. And it's crucial to understand the distinction between reckless disregard and just plain negligence. The court wasn't saying these officers were liable just because they were careless and relied on someone else's information. The problem was they made these definitive, clearly false statements without seemingly bothering to see if there was even a grain of truth to them. That's a much higher bar than just making an honest mistake.
That's a crucial point. It wasn't about whether they slipped up or made a genuine error. It was about whether their actions showed a reckless indifference to the truth, like they were trying to pass off speculation as fact.
Exactly. And remember, the way they phrased it mattered a lot. They didn't say, "We think we made a profit," or "Our early estimates suggest." They stated it as a concrete fact. And that kind of certainty carries a lot of weight. It implies a level of confidence that they clearly didn't have.
And we can't forget how significant the information was. These weren't just small discrepancies. They were totally misrepresenting whether the company was making money or losing a huge amount. And that had a direct impact on Sovereign Pocahontas' decisions.
Right. The false statements about profitability were the direct reason why Sovereign Pocahontas decided to hold back on collecting that debt and even give the company more credit. If they had known the truth about the financials, their actions would have been totally different.
So to wrap up our deep dive into Sovereign Pocahontas Company v. Bond, the key takeaway is this. Corporate officers, they can absolutely be held liable for fraud if they make obviously false statements about their company's financial health, especially if they do it confidently and without any qualifications, even if they claim they didn't personally know the statements were false. The court really focused on whether they acted with reckless disregard for the truth, basically presenting a belief as if it were a proven fact without any reasonable grounds to do so.
And this case continues to be incredibly important for holding corporations accountable. It really underscores the responsibilities that come with being in a position of leadership, especially when it comes to communicating financial information that others will rely on. You can't just throw out numbers without taking some responsibility for their accuracy, especially when you're presenting them as the absolute truth.
It definitely gives us a lot to think about when it comes to accountability. And it leaves us with a final question. In today's world where information spreads like wildfire, especially online, how does this idea of reckless disregard apply to how company leaders share financial information, especially when it might not be verified? It's a question with huge implications for how we view corporate responsibility in this digital age.